Welcome to the Akashic Reading Podcast, presented by AkashicReading.com, the place where you can learn to access your soul's wisdom, or at least stop digging the hole any deeper. I'm your host, Terry Uktana, and today we'll be talking about how soulmates aren't the solution the romances tell us they are, fixer-uppers usually don't end up fixed, and the challenge of creating a partnership is actually the path forward for healthy relationship. So, do soulmates exist? Absolutely. I know several couples who are soulmates and have found each other and lived happily ever after, at least so far. But don't let the pink romantic glow settle in just yet. Don't make that deep sigh a reality because there's more to the story. Not everyone has a soulmate, for which I'm eternally grateful. I can hear the eyebrows raising, but stay with me here. Most people think of a soulmate as just the really perfect partner. They think there are a lot of people who could work or who could be configured or jury-rigged or duct-taped into the right configuration, but there's one special someone who is just perfect. It's a bit like the relationship version of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. This one's too hot, and this one's too cold, and this one's just right. But that's not what a soulmate is in actuality. A soulmate is a specific type of relationship contract, one so strict and binding it affects all aspects of each partner's life. A soulmate is something you have to agree to prior to coming into this embodied life. And in agreeing, there'll be one and only one person who will fit with you. You will have excluded all others. It's like being a cell phone which has a unique charger connection. No other power cord will do. Only that exact one which is made for just you. It's romantic in a way, but it's also a setup for a really tragic comedy of errors. I mean, if you don't remember you have a soulmate contract, you think you're just any other boy or girl and you want to date and have fun and enjoy life, you can't. All dates fail or go sideways because those people aren't for you. It's like the princess with the curse. Nothing works, even though you're doing everything right. But that's okay, right? Because in the end, you're going to meet the one person who's meant for you and live happily ever after, right? Well, this is where we get into the second problem, logistics. Having a soulmate, having two people who are perfect for each other and destined to come together, is like throwing two darts at each other from 1,000 miles away and hoping they meet tip to tip in the middle without having had anything deflect them or block their path. The odds of this working out is one of those numbers which takes a professional mathematician to figure out. The problem is so prevalent, Shakespeare wrote about it, and his play is one of the best known and most beloved tragedies in the world. Logistically, having a soulmate takes pre-planning before an embodied life to a greater degree than other types of relationships. The two souls have to agree on any number of things to make this happen, like embodying in relatively the same time frame so the ages work, what sex and sexual orientation to be, ethnicities, socioeconomic status, what continents to be on, and all the triggering events and signals to use in order to get themselves to meet up and recognize each other. Then they need to plan what their personal journeys will be because once together, the lives will be entwined and need to not be at odds with each other, as far as goals and pleasures and pursuits. All of which makes the two embodied souls like magnets pulling towards each other, helping the darts sail through the air in each other's direction. And also enhances the tragedy if the epic fail occurs and they don't meet up with each other, or they do, and somehow it doesn't work out. Because what happens to one soulmate if the other dies early? Or if they ignore all the signals and triggering events and do something completely different? What if the two meet up and something forces them apart, but they don't do something tragic like suicide? Everything about their life is structured to make them incompatible for anyone else but the one specific person who isn't there. Nothing else feels quite right and nothing else works out. Great story, too bad for the person who actually has to live it. Don't get me wrong, I love a good cathartic tragedy as much as the next person. In novels or plays or TV or movies. However, when I work with people who are living the real thing, I'm not enthused. And I'm a romantic who roots for these couples as much as the next guy. I think it's fabulous when soulmates go walking past me glowing so bright you can't help but see them. But to me, the alternative most people choose for relationship in their life seems much more practical and enjoyable and filled with much more possibility and joy and fun. When I read most people's soul books, what I find is not a soulmate contract, but a stack of contracts for possible relationship partners. Because life is a series of decisions, of if-then statements, which move us from here to there and help us co-create our experience of the world around us. So they keep their options open. If having a partner is something the person has on their agenda, they'll have an array of contracts set up so no matter what they've chosen, no matter what path they've taken up to that point in their lives, they'll have the ability to connect and create a happily ever after, which is more amazing than they could have imagined before they embodied. I like to call this deciding on a partner point in a person's life the ice cream moment. Instead of having one soulmate that's exquisitely perfect for them, they have an array of choices of partner, all of whom are fantastic, none of whom is better than any other. It's like going into an ice cream store and picking out what you want. It's all ice cream, so go to town. It's not about what's right, but what you want in the moment. There are no wrong choices when choosing ice cream, just preferences and joy. And you get to sample and explore, be wild or traditional, try sprinkles for goodness sake. Which also means for most people, it's not about waiting for the right person to come along, but stating to the universe, okay, I'm ready to start meeting people. Let's get this party started. Putting the signal out there starts contracts rolling and people moving in your direction or you moving in theirs. And from there, who knows what can happen? Partners come in all shapes and sizes, from spouses to fiancés, from high school and college sweethearts to significant other of decades, from handfasted to co-parenting entrepreneurs and all the combinations in between. Partners are what we think of when we think of the perfect person to share our life. This would be the person who understands and supports us, loves us the way we deserve, builds a life with us where we can live happily ever after, and who wants to engage in the type of life we're striving for or tend to create. Sometimes what we look for is someone who can be our other half. We hope to find a person who's good at what we aren't, can help us where we struggle, and will like doing the things we would rather not. Other times we're trying to find someone who's close to a twin. We need a buddy for the buddy cop movie, which is our life. Someone who sees the world the way we do, can validate our experiences, and thereby extends the boundaries of our life so there's more room to grow and create. But no matter what style we long for, most people agree the process for finding them, well, sucks. Dating, for most people, is a grueling process which can be detrimental to self-esteem, let alone our opinion concerning the goodness of humanity. No matter how we go about it, whether we're meeting people through work, in our spiritual religious community, via dating apps, meetup groups, hobbies, or blind dates, the process is like being interviewed for a new job, only it's a version of our very personal self which is being judged. Then beyond this first hurdle, there's the 90-day probationary period, which means going out with each other to see if it works. This can go on for only a few dates, a number of weeks, several months, or a couple of years. There's no set time frame for figuring things out, even if there should be. Some people just know, others need time to admit they know, and still others will need more time to act on this knowing, since taking action will make it real and mean starting over. Often, we're more attached to the process of being a couple than we are to the person we're coupling with for any number of reasons, so breaking up becomes as bad as the thought of dating again. As if all of this weren't difficult enough, being in a relationship is in itself an amazing, vulnerable, humbling, rewarding thing which can fulfill or devastate us depending on who we connect with and how we're able to relate or not, as the case may be. Too often, our childhoods and experience as young adults has taught us to be cautious about letting people in, whether from dysfunctional family dynamics, traumatic events, or run-ins with narcissists and those out for their own gain. We've learned to wear armor, use hypervigilance to scan for problems and intent, and to keep our vulnerable bits well protected from outside influences. This isn't a bad thing in general. I mean, the idea is to use our skills and abilities to create safe space in which to live and manifest a beautiful, bountiful, healthy, spiritually aligned life where we have a modicum of control. Therefore, we can nurture ourselves while locating the person best suited to us and to our life. Once we've found the person, we can invite them in to join us, or we can be invited to merge our lives with theirs, thereby creating something even better. Unfortunately, somewhat like cooking, there are times when the combination of ingredients should create something delectable, but what we end up with is a hot mess. Whether we're getting out there trying to find the right person or working our spiritual path in order to manifest our soulmate, or both, it's not uncommon for things to go in directions we never intended and which don't work out for anyone's best or highest good. The two most common issues are when one person takes on an informal role as teacher, then enters into a relationship with a student, or a healer/manifester becomes interconnected with someone who is really a client. A teacher-student relationship starts with the foundation of one partner being more knowledgeable or an expert in the life being created, while the other partner is desiring to learn or grow into that life. This is rarely a formal situation, although those do happen. Usually, this is a casual thing, which forms right along with the relationship. It happens a lot in the spiritual community, where one partner is fully engaged in a practice or path, and the other has never come into contact with it or just started to realize what a spiritual life can be like. Finding someone who shares your passion, wants to learn, is growing into a healthier version of themselves, and is willing to listen to something which is the essence of who you are, is exciting, attractive, and downright sexy. It's amazing to find someone who fits in so well. And it's safe, right up until it's not. The person in the teacher role is able to set boundaries, expectations, goals, and direction for their life, and their student will, of course, be willing to follow. Like all students, they don't know what they don't know. Begin as sponges who are open to new experiences and are trusting of the teacher. This allows the teacher a level of control which can be healthy or toxic, depending on their nature. However, a student will eventually learn enough, become enough, grow enough in themselves and their path to recognize their own needs. These may be in alignment with, slightly different from, or often wildly different than the teacher's. Unfortunately, in a teacher-student relationship, there is very little room for the student to change their role, take on agency or authority concerning the path, or even speak their truth. In fact, a student standing up to speak their truth after weeks, months, or years of not having done so can seem like rebellion. It can seem as if they become a completely different person, or even a traitor, for better or worse. This creates a common dynamic of the relationships just not working out, on the one hand, or imploding on the other, and both parties are left with hurt, recriminations, and the questions of what went wrong and what they're meant to learn from it all. Relationships between a healer, manifester, and clients can seem similar to teacher-students, but are even more transactional. Each and every one of us is a social animal who has an innate need to be seen, desired, needed, and included. It feels good to know we're the one who has made another happy, fulfilled a need, created goodness in their life, or is their special and only one. It's even better when this is someone we desire in return, who we love and appreciate, who we connect with deeply and makes us feel complete. Along with this is the truth that in life, we all need help once in a while. If we're our most beautiful in the broken bits, as the saying goes, then we also feel the most loved when we are cared for in our brokenness. Love and relationship is one way in which we make the most beautiful art out of the broken pieces, helping each other through our difficulties and struggles, even if they're just about carrying the groceries in and the garbage out. However, healers and manifestors find they relate best to people who need just that little bit, or quite a lot, of extra help in order to find and stay on their path. Part of the sense of self and of self-worth is in helping others, which they usually do in various, if not all, aspects of their lives. This leads them to feel a deep attraction to those who share similar experiences and outlook, but are also in need of help one way or another. On the one hand, this allows the healer manifester to be seen, their essential nature to be validated, and to feel their purpose in life is being fulfilled. On the other hand, like a teacher-student relationship, it's a controllable and safe relationship to be in right up until it's not. Someone who needs help, who can't quite do things on their own, or who struggles in one fashion or another, will desire to fit themselves into the life a healer or manifester has created. However, the healer-manifester's life is built on two underlying and usually unspoken assumptions. The person in need of help will eventually get better, and this person will reward the healer for the work they've done in one way or another, as all clients should. I call this style of relationship transactional. In essence, the healer or manifester, for one reason or another, feels they need to earn the love and connection with the other through what they do. They therefore help the other, sometimes until they're worn so thin they can barely function any longer, in the hopes that one day they'll be told it's enough, whereupon they can stop and begin receiving the life and love they deserve. Unfortunately, this rarely, if ever, happens. As the relationship is based on helping and helped, the helped, who is in actuality a client rather than a partner, either is not able or chooses not to move into a more healthy and capable way of being. In fact, they may even tilt things further towards themselves, becoming a tyrant in the relationship, and using their needs as a means of taking control. This type of situation can quite quickly become abusive, as is often seen amongst those struggling with alcohol and drugs, hence the existence of Al-Anon. In both these categories of relationships, teacher-student, or healer-manifester and client, the common theme is control through inequality. In order to be safe, one partner creates a relationship founded on earned authority. They're the one with the knowledge, wisdom, or expertise which they'll give to the other. They have exactly what the other person needs to be whole and gives it to them in order for them both to be better and grow into their full and best selves. Often the intention, conscious or otherwise, is for this to be a temporary situation where the other partner will grow into themselves, become healthy and an equal, allowing the need for teaching and helping and creating to end, and both to walk their path together, like two well-matched horses pulling a cart full of overflowing abundance. However, the foundation of anything, relationship or otherwise, is, well, foundational. Once one is set, it doesn't change unless something radical happens. If a building has structural problems, it is possible to remove the entire building and start over, or for an earthquake or flood to come, or the land might just wash away entirely. But otherwise, you're pretty much stuck with what you've got, and the best you can do is build a structure based on, around, or despite it. Can people change? Of course. It's the only constant in the universe. But the change may mean they choose to engage in actively attempting never to change. In relationships, there are perpetual students who simply stay in the comfortable realm of being taught and so never challenge their partner. On the other hand, there are those who grow to surpass the teacher rather than forming into the partner which was expected. Clients can heal, but once they do, they don't need the healer anymore and move on. At the same time, there are clients who have no intention of healing and instead stay forever in the limbo of being helped but not getting better. Partners are the most rewarding and the most challenging relationship to create because a partner is, by definition, an equal. While they may at times need our help, while they will never know everything we do and so will learn from us, they're not in relationship with us because of a desire to be taught or a need to be healed. They require us to be vulnerable, speak our truth, and hold our boundaries, while at the same time being open to them doing the same. They offer us the ability to create an interconnection like an infinity symbol, their authentic self feeding into, challenging, and encouraging ours, which invites and instigates us to do the same for them. Partner relationships are founded on a basis of equality from the outset. They allow us to gently set aside our need to be safe and encourage us to see the connection as an adventure where both can grow, fail, unfold, withdraw, become and grow wise in union and individually. This is not to say there are perfect soulmate situations where no work needs to be done, no one gets their feelings hurt, no problems occur and everything comes up roses. Far from it. No adventure is without a little danger and the occasional U-turn. However, a partner relationship founded on two equals choosing each other weaves these events into even stronger bonds, which are eventually nourishing and allows each to flourish. So rather than attempting to find someone who is your best and perfect partner for who you are right now, who is willing to look past all your defenses to see the real you, or who can fit themselves into the life you're living now in the hopes they can help you create something better later, I recommend setting your intention to manifest your fully equal partner, someone who is just as willing and able as you to be fully themselves, who you can feel safe enough to remove the armor, and who doesn't need you to fix them nor wants to fix you. From this foundation, almost anything and everything is possible. And that's all the time we have this week. If you're interested in knowing more, check out my website, akashicreading.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please consider supporting it by subscribing on Patreon. You can see all my other offerings and get regular updates about what I'm working on at patreon.com/TerryUchtena. Thanks. Bye.